This is Voice of the Cave Drive Time. Going places. Getting there.
91.3, welcome back to the show. After months of teasing, Boko Haram has finally pledged allegiance to the Islamic State, an alliance that, in theory, makes both sides bigger, badder, and more brutal than before. But what if the theory is wrong? What if this is a sign of weakness, not strength? And what does this mean for the rest of the world? The person who's asked these questions, Jasmine Opperman, Africa Director at the Terrorism Research and Analysis Consortium, is online. Jasmine, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Now, looking at the news, we've been hearing rumors for some time. Now, Boko Haram comes out, the leader comes out, and on a video announces that he is prepared to pledge allegiance to the Islamic State. What do you make of that?
First and foremost, it comes as no surprise. This has been forthcoming since middle of last year, and also where the first serious indications of actually Boko Haram aligning to ISIS was seen in January this year, 2015, in terms of the media propaganda campaign, where they started using the same sheets in their audio releases, in their video statements. So the alignment between Boko Haram and ISIS is no surprise, but we need to note that ISIS still has to recognize the Pledge of Allegiance, and this is important. What is important with the pledge, and this is where it fits squarely in with Boko Haram and Shekau, is that Boko Haram has now defined itself within the international jihadist global context. It has put itself right there with ISIS. It has aligned itself. So if one starts talking ISIS, and ISIS will accept at the end of the pledge, I foresee Boko Haram is now part and parcel of this package. Secondly, we must note that Shekau is one of the most significant pledges of allegiance by a group for ISIS, whereas in other areas we had breakaway factions. We don't have any indication of that in Boko Haram. This seems like a unitary decision being taken by the group. No breakaway was needed. And for ISIS, this is a significant pledge of allegiance in terms of their prestige as well. So it is not merely a symbolic act. I think we have to be clear here. There are significant implications from a counterterrorism perspective and also from the role that these two groups will play in that specific region.
Do you think what also is significant that the Al-Qaeda franchise, let's call it that, is diminishing by the day because ISIS is not Al-Qaeda? I think we have to make that distinction.
Yes, yes.
That Abu Musab al-Zarqawi reports I've got is that he never, in fact, pledged allegiance to Osama bin Laden or Dr. Zawahiri, his successor. Yeah.
That's correct. I think it's very important to make that distinction. We are talking about a schism in the global jihadist world, a schism in which we've seen ISIS coming in, and I would like to refer to it as a jihadist coup being pulled by ISIS, where they have more specifically taken the younger generation with them, and they are clearly building and expanding. Yes, it has slowed down with the counterterrorism offenses now currently in Syria and Iraq, but still, the most significant and important group. And Al-Qaeda has a problem in terms of keeping at number one and maintaining its significance. It seems like to be failing. If one looks, just to make it a bit more relevant to Africa, already there are rumors now that with the Al-Shabaab, there's a split with people actually wanting to move over to ISIS. Now, where there's smoke, there's fire. We don't have confirmation of that at this point in time, though.
Yes, it's interesting you've made the point about Al-Shabaab. Do you think what is the most significant thing of all is that while Al-Qaeda had this theory of training people at a central point and then spreading out to other parts of the world, what you've got with ISIS and now you've got it with Boko Haram and you've got it with Al-Shabaab, these are organizations that actually own territory.
And I think that is a very important distinction that you are making there. We must keep and remember ISIS is calling it, referring to its whole initiative as the Islamic Caliphate Project. That means expansion and control. Wherever they go, wherever here, there's your physical territory at stake, then control is the objective. We've seen this already with Boko Haram, although their control over areas, I think, is totally overestimated. I think one has to qualify the actual areas of control, which is far smaller than that has been reported. But Boko Haram is clearly following the same line in terms of trying to get control of specific areas. And that will now just intensify as we go along.
Do you think something else that we also need to look at is that a lot of these jihadi movements are attracting people often on political grounds and sometimes not always on religious, that in fact it's politics and perceived injustices in various parts of the world against Islam rather than the theological side of things? I mean, what's your take when people put that question to you?
My take is as follows. First and foremost, when we are talking about ISIS, at the end of the day, their fundamental objective remains the Islamic Caliphate, the formation thereof, with the Islamic Caliphate that then will lead to what they perceive as the Armageddon, the fight between believers and unbelievers, where at the end then, what according to them are the believers, will gain ultimate victory. We must not try to see them as mutually exclusive concepts. ISIS has taken both, has taken them into an integrated unity within their ideology and projected as such. Now, initially, ISIS had tremendous success in gaining foreign fighters. Why? Not so much religious ideology, but because of opposition to the Assad government in Syria. That was one of the fundamental motivations between people moving into Syria, moving into Iraq in support of ISIS. What we are seeing these days, though, is there is a change in trend where there is a fallback in terms of a belief in the religious ideology of ISIS. But I'm qualifying by saying if we talk ISIS, politics and religion are as integrated as you can get. And to try to make a distinction is going to be extremely difficult.
So, of course, it is quite interesting to see that the level of theological knowledge sometimes is something that leaves something to be desired. I mean, there's a report of MI5 catching two people trying to go to Syria, and they'd ordered Islam for Dummies from Amazon.com. That doesn't say too much, does it?
No, it doesn't. But I think also we must be careful in using that one report. ISIS future is completely dependent on its own defined religious credibility. Therefore, when you go to the big magazines and you study them carefully, everything they say goes back to a hadith where they find justification of their action. For them, religious credibility is their lifeline into the future. Let's just make the distinction. That we have individuals that decide to support ISIS, we need to understand how ISIS recruit. Remember, ISIS, yes, they do have recruitment cells, but they rely on the social media. The social media publishes then ISIS propaganda material, and then individuals will respond, being influenced by various sources, and that will then at the end of the day and could facilitate the decision to go. So yes, there will be examples of relying on a book like For Dummies, and that is now being put on the table as to see this is very superficial recruitment. I think we are underestimating the sophistication of ISIS if we're going to start doing that in their recruitment processes of foreigners.
Yes, well, in fact, I mean, the other day, Daily Maverick, and we've also been following it up at this radio station, the activity in social media, the Abu Huraira, an 18-year-old youth, yes, originally believed to be from Gauteng, but our suspicions are that he might come from the Port Elizabeth family that is reported to have sold up and moved to Syria. Do you think that what has to be factored in, and we haven't discussed it yet, is the fact that mainline Islamic scholars around the world, Shia and Sunni, have thoroughly discredited the theological standpoint of ISIS, that ISIS within mainstream Islam is a discredited movement?
I would just terror is it in the eyes of whom? We need now to be very specific here.
All right, I can be very specific. I can tell you that 120 of the world's prominent scholars on Islamic law penned something called an open letter in which they openly condemned ISIS on a theological basis. You'll find that all the theological organizations in South Africa, the Muslim Judicial Council, the Jamaat al-Ulama, for example, have also come out vocally, strongly, and condemned ISIS theologically.
Yes, yes, and I have done that, and I agree with you that there is a definite movement at play in terms of saying that ISIS is not represented and cannot be seen as credible. And with that whole line, no argument that is happening. The question, though, is, and this is where we need to bring it back to us, what is the impact of these statements on the possible support for ISIS out there? And this is the crux of the matter, because what we're having official statements being made, well-informed, well-defined, well-argued, against an ISIS propaganda machine that has got color, that's got visuals, that shows the organization as being active, as being doing something, that shows its brutality in all its forms. And it just seems that this whole propaganda machine is so overwhelming that the discrediting of the organization, the discrediting initiatives and statements, which of course in themselves have rightful arguments, simply cannot hold up against ISIS and what it's trying to achieve. And that then constitutes a constant flow of recruiters or new recruits going to Syria and Iraq. That ISIS, this criticism that they are discredited, I am not arguing. I'm just saying the impact and the effect thereof, I don't see as strongly as the actual compared to the support forthcoming from ISIS.
Right. Now, Jasmine, how do we tie this all into Nigeria? Because Boko Haram recently have upped their media antics. Their recent videos are looking more professional. It's horrible to have to say these things, but that's the truth.
It is. Yes.
How does Boko Haram tie into this? Because Boko Haram do not seem to be as sophisticated, and nor do they have the financial clout. I mean, ISIS has openly been declared the richest organization in the world, but Boko Haram certainly isn't.
No, it isn't. But we must also keep in mind, I think what we've seen with the various implications, we must keep in mind, if you would allow me to explain, that this Pledge of Allegiance has been forthcoming for a while now.
Right.
This is not something that has happened now. We've seen it since the end of last year. We've seen it January with the Masjid and the propaganda campaigns that they picked up. Boko Haram currently are faced with two fundamental problems: recruitment and arms. So the Pledge of Allegiance now clearly indicates to me that Boko Haram is shouting for help. That there's an outcry that to be able to sustain themselves with a current counteroffensive, these two aspects need to be attended to. Is that going to happen? I don't foresee that happening immediately. I think Boko Haram is in for a big surprise if they think that tomorrow there will be 2,000 foreign fighters coming into North Nigeria to fight. I don't foresee that happening. So yes, it does show a sign of weakness in Boko Haram, hence the Pledge of Allegiance. And we need to be clear about that. Secondly, the other crucial impact now that we must keep in mind is if we talk deterring ISIS, we're talking deterring Boko Haram. So what we are going to see is whenever these things are being discussed is that North East Nigeria becomes central to this debate of countering ISIS. Boko Haram has put itself under severe pressure now in terms of getting more attention from a counterterrorism perspective. And who knows? Maybe more foreign interest in that area could be forthcoming. So these are various factors, but then it's a cry for help from Boko Haram. Yes, it's a cry of weakness from Boko Haram, that they are under pressure, yes. But we need to qualify that again. The current successes against Boko Haram is their frontline fighters. We are not talking about their cell structures, hence my degree. 5 bomb blasts in one day. It tells me the cells are active. They are vibrant. They are planning and they are executing. And the link between those cells and ISIS is and will become the lifeline of Boko Haram.
So it's certainly an interesting landscape. And something else that's also mentioned, that one of the Algerian jihadi movements was basically facing extinction, and it survived by joining a bigger movement at that stage, Al-Qaeda, and was able to reinvent itself. Could one argue in another way that Boko Haram has got to a stage where if it doesn't reinvent itself, it could face even face extinction?
And the severe pressure that what is currently happening is new to them, that they are faced with multiple forces that still are fighting in blocks against them. Yes, I think there is a great awareness within the Boko Haram leadership that this is a battle they have not foreseen, a battle that they are ill-equipped, actually, to counter, and hence they need to redefine their role and find survival channels for the future. And hence it takes us back to the Pledge of Allegiance. The Pledge of Allegiance could also refer back, and we're playing with possibilities here because we don't have confirmed information, but this could be a leadership deciding to go for a Pledge of Allegiance if problems are seriously going bad in northeast Nigeria. At least the leaders can have a safe haven to escape to from where Boko Haram can be sustained for the long term, a possibility that cannot be negated. And this safe haven is as close as Libya. Libya's role has again been redefined as crucial in that area in terms of the ISIS footprint going out in Africa, and that footprint now clearly present in northeast Nigeria.
Jasmine, it certainly is a very interesting landscape to actually discuss. Finally, you know, to look at the whole situation, do you think at the end of the day, if one wants to solve this problem, and a problem it is, probably, you know, more so for us in the Muslim community, do you think that the ultimate answer is not military action? It's taking place in Iraq and Syria. It will beat them back to a certain point. Do you think that there needs to be some kind of political initiative? What it is, I don't know, because Boko Haram and ISIS don't seem to be prepared to talk to anybody. Do you think they need to be weakened so they do talk?
Yes, I think they do. I think the problem, the solving of Boko Haram's problem is far broader than a military offensive. But a military offensive is needed. Yes, but that a military offensive is needed from within Nigeria is fundamental. Nigerian government has failed in northeast Nigeria. Let's call a fact a fact here.
Right.
They have failed the people of northeast Nigeria and has allowed Boko Haram to expand to the problem we have there today. Hence, we have the regional forces. The military will move in and will clear the areas. The military will not solve the problem of cell presence. There is a much deeper solution to be found in institutional stability, in creating an environment conducive for development, in creating an environment where your cells will find it extremely difficult to recruit and stir up an anti-government extremist ideology in that. So I agree with you that military in isolation as an exclusive approach is doomed to fail already.
Jasmine Opperman, Africa Director at the Terrorism Research and Analysis Consortium. We could have carried on talking until dawn tomorrow, but Raider determines we have to end at 5:30. Jasmine, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you for the invitation. Thank you.